Welcome to the Incredible Eye Show, where the past, present, and future of the IBM Eye come alive. Every episode, we delve into the remarkable world of IBM Eye, shedding light on its transformative power and unparalleled resilience. From its storied history to today's innovative solutions, we bring you insights, interviews, and a touch of tech wizardry. Whether you're a seasoned IBM Eye professional, a tech enthusiast, or someone looking to understand the significance of IBM Eye in today's tech landscape, this is the podcast for you. So buckle up and get ready to be inspired. Hey, listeners, before we get started today, I want to take a moment to shine a big, bright light on our two new sponsors. First up, meet Bright Skies. Ever felt lost in the digital transformation maze? Bright Skies is here to guide. With their expertise, your business isn't just surviving, it is thriving in this digital age. And speaking of experts, up next, programmers.io. Imagine having tech maestros at your fingertips, turning your software visions into seamless reality. That's the magic programmers.io brings to the table. Massive appreciation to both Bright Skies and programmers.io for backing the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Incredible Eye Show as we continue to roll out the start of season six. I had the pleasure of recording live and in person at the Common Europe Congress in beautiful Prague. On this show, I am joined by two tech luminaries who are set to ignite your curiosity. Meet Doug Gibbs, I/O product manager at IBM, and Steve Bradshaw, the friendly techie from Roten IT. We dive into the revolutionary world of NVMEs, unveiling the secrets of how to pronounce the mysterious letter H, and uncovering the unbeatable combination of affordability and power behind IBM I. Get ready for a dynamic discussion that will leave you inspired and informed in the world of technology. Welcome to the show, Steve and Doug. All right, everybody, welcome to the Incredible Eye Show. We are live in Prague interviewing for the show. I am so honored to have as my guest host today, Steve Bradshaw. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me back. It's wonderful to be doing this in person.
I know. The Common Europe Congress is going on right now. And so we have snagged a couple of people from the show floor, and we are super excited to welcome to the show Douglas Gibbs from IBM. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Wow, it's amazing to be here. Thank you for inviting me and for, I don't know if snagging versus dragging me kicking and screaming off of the show floor to be with you. But I'm very honored to be here and very happy.
Yeah, thank you. So, Doug, we usually start off the interviews on the Incredible Eye Show with our guests talking a little bit about your history. Could you share with our listeners where, you know, how you landed on the IBM Eye? Give us a little bit about you.
So I first had some exposure to IBM I many years ago, back in the 90s, when I was with a startup company and we did a solution that leveraged MQ and WebSphere and DB2. I was responsible for bringing up that platform and managing all of those components. And it was interesting to see how different the platform was based to Unix's I'd been working in the past, but how similar it was once everything was operational. Since then, I guess you could say I've had a hiatus because of the various job roles I had. But back in 2018, I moved into my current role, originally called Offering Management, now referred to as Product Management. And I picked up the I/O portfolio for the Power Platform, and that allowed me to get into the I platform, as well as to many other things that were net new to me or somewhat of a similar technology to me. And it was very exciting, and it still is.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. And so today on the show, I have, as I said, Steve Bradshaw here to help interview Doug, because Doug is, he handles a lot of incredible hardware. And today we're going to be talking about NVMEs and a presentation you guys just did. So, Steve, why don't you give us a little background on that?
So, I'm super excited that you did this. NVMEs are a subject that are close to my heart. And, Doug, I know they're close to yours, too. Now, just for those three people on the podcast that don't know what an NVMe is, could you just give us a little step backwards and say what it is and perhaps how it's different from normal storage?
Certainly, I'd love to. First off, I think I'll start by saying that NVMe devices are incredible. And they are because they are a solid-state drive, just like you would traditionally use. However, they have a few components that are no longer required. So they no longer require a SAS adapter and the configuration of SAS storage. Instead, it's a reduced instruction set with a controller on the media device that sits right on the PCI bus. Doing this makes the devices incredibly fast and very efficient.
Okay, so let's just unpick that a little bit. You said, I don't need SAS controllers anymore. Presumably that means I don't need the big storage backplane that was quite expensive that sat in front of that SAS controller. And it plugs into the PCI board. Okay, so I get two things from that. One, those components, the planar and the SAS adapters, they were expensive. Okay, and the PCI bus I know is faster. So, am I right in thinking that that somehow makes it a little more less expensive to purchase?
Yes, it does. So we still have a planar for the backboard for the storage to plug into from the front of the server for those devices. And on our scale-out platform, we do require one or PCI slots to be used to drive the data through to the PCI bus. So those adapters, although they're used to drive the data on the NVMEs, they are significantly less expensive than the traditional SAS adapters. If we look at our high-speed adapters versus our JBOD adapters, there obviously was a significant price difference between a JBOD and something that had the cache and the cache batteries that would provide all that resiliency for your write cache.
Okay, so I'll just jump in. I'm supposed to sit there and demystify this. So JBOD, just a bunch of disks?
Just a bunch of Dougs, just a bunch of disks.
Okay. I think there are some other Ds in there, but perhaps we'll leave that for after the recording. So, okay, I get the fact that it's now simpler and it potentially saves some money. I know that you won't jump in there because it depends, but in my presentation recently, I did a standard configuration of the P5 in for us IBMI users, and on a PO5 I saw a 30% reduction in the whole of the hardware cost, not just the storage, all of the hardware. That's how much money we saved. Would you say that was a reasonable saving based on RRP?
Oh, absolutely. Now, one of the reasons why NVMEs are less expensive is the density of them. So we have multiple sizes starting at 800 gig going up to 6.4 terabytes. On the Enterprise SAS SSDs, we were starting off around 300 gigs and only going up to 1.55 terabytes. So I can replace a whole bunch of those devices with just one device, and I don't need to have that expensive cache adapter that gives me the high-speed throughput that they most customers would desire.
Fantastic. Now, a few of the listeners will now be having kittens because they're going, 800's the smallest? Well, crikey, I need six of those to make my performance okay in IBMI as a bare minimum. And so I don't want that much storage on there. So what's the secret of NVMEs that mean that whether it's the 800 or the 6.4 terabytes, that I don't need to have multiples of them in order to make my IBMI scream super fast?
Excellent question. So traditionally we think of IBMI being able to take advantage of storage by maximizing the number of arms. And if we look at traditional HDD drives where we would have rows upon rows of HDDs, well, we were able to reduce that down to rows, instead of rows upon rows, of SSDs. And what we've done with NVMEs is we reduce those row of NVMEs into two devices, potentially, depending on the amount of data you require. We can create up to 32 or 64 namespaces, where distinct areas within every NVMe device, and every one of those namespaces gets looked at as though it is a device LUN or an ARM. And so one of these NVMe drives could potentially have 64 LUNs on it.
Yeah. One device physically in the front emulates up to 64 virtual disks. I mean, IBM I just sees them as disk arms, yeah?
Correct. It just sees it as a LUN, so it doesn't know the programming or the end user. They're not going to have a clue what is at the end of that ARM. They just know that it is something. It's a LUN. It's a logical unit that they can use for their operations. And the system administrators are just going to simply configure them into their ASP, and away you go.
Okay, still sounds too good to be true. So do I need to have BIOS to make this work?
You do not require BIOS. You have a whole bunch of different options between virtualizing through BIOS, sharing without BIOS, and of course, dedicating your drives. And I want to talk briefly about dedicating versus virtualization. In the past, if I had multiple SAS devices, and it doesn't matter if it was an HDD or an SSD, in order for me to share those with multiple partitions, I was required to virtualize that. So I could then create virtual SCSI hosts that could be used for my guest systems. Now, with the NVMe being a PCIe device, we're able to directly assign that PCIe device to a partition. So if I think of a new Power 10 system with up to 16 NVMe's inside of it, I can create 8 partitions with dedicated storage, or I could create a whole bunch of other partitions between a mix of dedicated and or virtual storage.
Wow. Okay, so you're saying that these things can be directly allocated, they can be shared. They can be carved up into different sizes, up to 64 of them. So how do we protect these? I mean, do you need a RAID card or something to make them work?
Fantastic question. Everybody's always asking me, where is a RAID? What RAIDs does my NVMe support? And from a hardware perspective, there is no RAID. Because we want to protect the data, since at the heart of many things within IBM I is the database, and we don't want to lose any of our data. So we enforce data protection by using NVMe mirroring or logical unit mirroring. So you must have at least 2 NVMe drives to provide your data mirroring.
Okay, so we take this example and we say, okay, we have one of these 3.2 terabyte ones, and we've carved that up into, let's say, 16 different namespaces. We've done that on both of them. So now are we mirroring those virtual disks, the 16 virtual disks that exist on my 2 physical devices, we mirror those together. That's how that works.
Correct. So you go into the work with disks, and from there you can do all the things you need to do, including creating your namespaces, deleting your namespaces, creating your mirrors.
Now, do we need any special software to do this, or will IBM I do it itself natively?
IBM I natively does all of this for you. You do have the option with VIOS if you want to mirror your NVMe drives or the logical volumes that you create with your NVMe drives. You could mirror them at the VIOS level, or you could mirror them in your IBM I level. It's probably a better bet to mirror them at your IBM I level, because you're most likely going to watch and monitor your logs at your IBM I level more often than you would with your VIOS.
Amen. So, I mean, I've seen that a lot with the small customers that I deal with in the UK. Typically, they're the smallest PO5 and P10 boxes, those two lower tiers of IBM I. And they tend to use all internal storage. And so having everything inside works really well for them. Yeah, the bigger guys or people who need more partitions, it's great to know that these also work with BIOS.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that question, small customer versus large customer. Is a small customer going to use NVMe's?
Well, absolutely. So the small customers is where you're going to probably see some of the bigger savings with NVMe, because we only have to have maybe 2 devices to start off with. Some of the small customers that are want to provide with a little bit more resiliency, they can add a third or fourth device to their configuration. They don't need to be using them. They can be left there as a warm standby concept. And from there, they only need minimal amount of storage devices to replace what used to be potentially multiple rows of storage.
And then my other question is around, is this an on-prem product or are cloud providers providing NVMEs, and can a customer take advantage of this in the cloud? I don't know that one.
That's okay. I think I can safely say I don't know that one either. Okay. But do you know the most infamous response from IBM on many of our questions? It depends.
It depends.
So I think the thing we can say for certain is that from Power 10 onwards, all internal storage will be NVMe-based. Internal storage in the system unit. Mm-hmm. There's still an option, if you're a sadist, or indeed a masochist, depending on who you're reflecting it upon, to actually have spinning disks. But, you know, they have a real niche place now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we can support externally some traditional SAS HDDs or SSDs, but we did recently announce a new external NVMe drawer as well. So really, the customers who are thinking they want more external storage on a typical S1024 scale-out system with internal drives and external drives, they could have 40 NVMe drives for a maximum of 256 terabytes of NVMe storage. Wow. Divide that in half. That's for your mirroring. 128 terabytes of NVMe storage mirrored.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
It's a lot of Netflix.
Yeah. For those of you who are storing your Netflix movies on your IBMI, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
There's always somebody out there.
Some people have this nervousness about moving to NVMe because they can think about the early days of SSD storage and flash storage and how it suddenly wears out and breaks. Can you talk about what IBM has been doing to actually, why are these devices so much better than their predecessors?
They've been adopted and accepted much faster than SSDs were. I mean, originally, I recall when SSDs were first being introduced years ago, it wasn't necessarily the endurance, but certainly there was concerns about endurance, but it was also the price. The initial price points for solid-state media was phenomenally more expensive than an HDD, and it was significantly smaller than an HDD as well. So you had two X's against you. With the NVMe drives, we know that they're more cost-effective already, and they're larger than our enterprise SSDs. So there's two big pluses. There are concerns from customers, however, that think about the endurance factor. We measure the endurance factor of an SSD using a what we call the drive write per day, or a DWPD. Your typical enterprise NVMe will have about a 3 drive writes per day. So if I consider my larger 6 terabyte drives, and my endurance rating for that is going to be the ability to read and write that drive 3 times per day. So 6.4 terabytes written and then erased, there's 18.8 terabytes. Multiply it 3 times, now you're talking 60 terabytes on one drive. And trying to read, write 60 terabytes in one day is a significant amount of workload. Now, if I bring that back to the 800 gig drive, obviously 800 gig drive, it's a little bit easier to read, write than that. But I can also have multiples of these drives. So I can spread my space out across multiple physical drives within all my ASPs.
Now, one of the things I noticed about this, to make sure that this is just not sales speak, one of the other things that used to happen with an SSD on IBMI is, as well as the expensive purchase price you mentioned, there would be an increase in the hardware maintenance for those individual drives. Now, I noticed that there is no extra charge in the hardware maintenance for NVMEs. So did you forget that, or is there a reason why you think that they're going to last?
Good question.
So on the Power 9 platform, that is correct. There was not a maintenance fee associated with the NVMe's because they are considered an NVMe adapter. And if you look at the rest of the adapters, there was not a maintenance fee associated with them. The SSDs, however, were looked at as a solid-state storage media, just like memory, and yes, they did have a maintenance fee associated with that. With Power 10 and how the maintenance was adjusted, it's now based upon price as opposed to price based upon all the components within the system as opposed to just the maintenance of some of the components in the system. So if I was to consider external storage and I have the option of my new NVMe, which of course I will promote shamelessly, that external NVMe is significantly faster than our external SAS, but it's also a lower price as well with more density available or more storage space overall. So with that lower cost, I'm still reducing my maintenance fees and introducing the latest and greatest in storage technology.
IBM, just give. Well, I love it.
You know what?
I love it.
We've talked about this recently, Peg. So IBM in 2022 gave away, sorry, Allison, if you're listening, reduced to zero cost, no extra charge, a huge proportion of the base IBM I operating system, which used to be chargeable. Now the hardware team are making the hardware cheaper. I mean, who would have thunk it? It's almost like IBM want people to buy these things.
Right. And with the new subscription model that just came out, that's another way a customer can save money.
Yeah, it certainly gets them in there at a much lower purchase cost.
Yeah.
Okay, so super excited about that. If you don't mind pivoting, and ladies and gentlemen, I know that was a little hardware heavy. This is why Peg doesn't have me on that often, because this is what I get off on.
Yes.
You and I have just been talking about iHosting. We've done a session together here in Prague, Doug. And we came at this from two different angles, me being an IBM I guy, and you being, you know, you love all of the brands or an on power kind of guy. So can we talk a little bit about what just happened and the reaction we got from the audience?
First off, I have been trying to drag you kicking and screaming into this session for a few years now, and I'm glad we were able to do it. It helps to actually have a physical event to be at to do this with, because it's so much easier. I've always enjoyed the idea of helping customers to understand how to maximize their platform abilities and continue to save money. And with IBM iHosting I, we can do that. And I know from some of the questions from the crowd we had and some of the discussions afterwards that some of the concepts we gave them were net new and they weren't fully aware of what they can or cannot do with regards to IBM iHosting IBI. And it was also great that it was not just about saving money, but it's also simplifying things like how we can share a tape adapter seamlessly without having to go through VIOS, how people need to just be aware of their licensing terms, but also how they can continue to add more IBM I instances to their existing platform rather affordably, I think.
And I couldn't agree more. I mean, the reason why, just dear listeners back home, that we haven't actually done this presentation before is that there are very few countries in the world that will grant both Douglas and I a visa at the same time. Who knew? The Czech Republic was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know how they let you in, Peg.
So I don't need a visa.
So I'm kidding, of course. They don't know we're here. We came in illegally.
Oh, okay.
So one of the things that we found in the audience, I think they said, you know, you don't need NVMEs to do iHosting I. However, now that we have NVMEs, iHosting I is so much a better proposition. Because one of the guilty confessions we had before with spinning disks is that the guest partitions at times could be a bit laggy on the performance. I mean, it was okay for test. It was okay for a bit of dev. But, you know, we wanted to get better performance. And suddenly this rocket fast storage came along. And Doug and I saw an opportunity to pitch both sides of this, me from a functionality and Douglas from actually sort of this practicality. What is this new technology? And I think that we were both stunned by the conversations afterwards where people said, what, you don't need VIOS? No, you don't need VIOS. Douglas, do you need a HMC to do this?
No, you do not need a HMC to do this. I know how to pronounce the H properly for you. I will do a segue here. There is my first time coming to Europe for work was right here in Prague a few years ago, and it did take me a few moments to get used to the concept of the HMC. But I would like to say thank you to Nigel Griffiths for helping me to understand the HMC versus HMC.
There we go. So one of these days we'll do some podcasts. So for dear listeners here in Europe, you might not realize that there are three different versions of English being spoken right now. So yeah, we have a Canadian, we have an American, and we have an English person. And each of those have their own subtle ways of pronouncing the English language. Mm-hmm. Now, in my opening presentation this morning, I explained that we'd also have plenty of other versions of English being spoken here. But if you want to hear English being spoken properly, go and ask someone from Sweden. Because in my experience, they're the only ones that get it right. Sorry, segueing off there. So we had that audience. We were quite surprised by the questions we were getting. And summarizing, we don't need a HMC. We don't need BIOS. And it doesn't matter whether we're using NVMe, spinning disks, external storage, internal storage. If IBM I can see it, you can virtualize it.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. It allows you to fully leverage all the different capabilities of both the power platform, the storage platforms, as well as, most importantly, IBM I itself.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure putting that on with you. Peg, yeah. Did you want to do anything with Douglas before we sum up here?
Well, I wanted to ask this question, and I can easily delete it if it doesn't make sense. But I was just kind of thinking about the I hosting I. What does that mean to an IBM I customer? What benefits do they get using I hosting I? Does that even make sense to ask
you? Perfect
it's a
question.
Great question.
I can't believe that we buried the lead. We probably should have started with that one, Peg.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Why does it make sense?
Why do I want to do this? Or why would a customer want to do this?
Yeah.
One of the best things about it is that if I need to add another IBM I instance without increasing my licensing or without increasing my need for VIOS, I can leverage IBM I hosting I. We can create all the virtual components with or without the HMC or HMC, depending where you're from. And we can leverage all the storage to map to those virtual components. And it doesn't matter as well. We could use the virtual Ethernet, right? We can bridge the Ethernet and we can virtualize it. What it allows us to do is save computing and memory resources for your IBM I partitions instead of assigning these resources to VIOS potentially. Mm-hmm. Because you still have to have some of those resources in order to literally boot the VIOS and then to operate as the virtual controller. We may also have some customers that would want two VIOSs. So now you're doubling those base requirements. On a PO5 system with 64 gigs of memory, that can be very expensive in the way of using limited memory resources. So by using IBM I hosting I, we're maximizing the resource utilization and we're minimizing the core requirements or the licensing requirements. Mm-hmm. I don't need to license more cores because I want to add more VIOS, I want to add more IBM I. It stays within my initial license tier.
So if I unpick that from an IBM I standpoint now, so you're saying if I only have one IBM I core licensed and I want to spin up a second or a third or a fourth partition, I do not need to buy any more licenses as long as I don't exceed my one limit. I share that license between them?
Correct. So if it, your limit could be X. So let's think about a PO5 platform because this is where it's very convenient. On a PO5 platform, maybe I've got one or two cores licensed. Typically, let's work with a single core, a two core license. My first primary, maybe production instance, let's consider I'm using 1.2 cores, and that's just the amount of CPW, that's all it requires. But now I want to do some more testing, or maybe I want to do some education, whatever it is. I want to add more IBM I to my platform without having to add a third core for licensing. And it doesn't matter if I want to add that third core to expand my VOS or potentially more CPW for additional IBM I's. I can stay within my current two core license maybe I'm jumping up to a 1.8 core utilization or fully a 2.0 core utilization, but I'm giving myself more IBMI partitions without increasing my base IBMI licensing cost, nor my SWAMA, nor my hardware maintenance fees. So those fees are all still remaining the same. I'm just using my server more.
Okay, so no new license required, no extra SWAMA required. I can reuse the same license, okay, for base IBMI. The ISVs may have their limitations.
Absolutely.
And I've got no extra hardware costs, no HWAMA costs. Let me do that one for you. It's the opposite of SWAMA, is my HWAMA. I'm not sure I'd do the other H on that. So is that right? There's no extra cost on any of those things at all?
If you're not adding any net new components or net new cores, your costs
you're
are fixed.
You're free to do whatever you want.
You're working within your license boundary.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the practicalities from the money side of it. One of the things that sort of came out of it in the debate this morning is people's reasons for wanting to do this. I mean, I think the most common one is that someone said, I'd really like to move my development environment out of my main production system into a separate partition, so it's standalone. So we thought, okay, that's pretty darn common. They tend to be smaller versions. The developer tends to be very close to the IBMI, particularly in these smaller shops where, you know, they typically haven't had the money to buy a second machine before.
Yeah.
So that one we thought, okay, we get that. Other people said that they wanted to test a 7.5 upgrade, so they would restore back a whole version of IBMI, put it up to 7.5, see how it looked. Okay.
I'm going to turn the tables here on you for a moment. I like this. You mentioned they're going to restore something. You taught me about how easy it is to do that restore, which is another fantastic thing about IBMI hosting IBMI, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the hidden gems of IBMI hosting IBMI is how much easier it makes to share a tape device or a tape library. Those of you who are familiar doing it in the old days, you would basically use the HMC to move the adapter card that drove the tape library from one partition to another. And that's fine, you can do it in the GUI, but it's really hard to script by comparison. Well, with IBMI hosting IBMI, you literally vary it off on one and vary it on another. So you sort of gain back the functionality that you used to have on the huge, very expensive IBM tape libraries with their fiber adapters, and you get it for free. And the hidden gem is, ladies and gentlemen, regardless of how you are using your system, so let's just say you have dedicated NVMEs, you have BIOS, you have dedicated external SANs, you can still use iHosting i to share the tape library between partitions, as long as they're on the same physical server. And it works a treat. It's really handy.
Yeah.
Over the years, it's just gotten easier and easier for the customer to manage the system. I remember just in the early days, you know, the S20s and the, you know, the smaller CISC boxes and then the RISC. But I just love that. Every day something is easier to do. Every release there's something easier to do.
That's part of the modernization. I mean, just because it's new doesn't mean it's necessarily harder. It also can be much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly think we've done a lot of that with many different aspects of the platform. Where I focus on, of course, with the I/O portfolio, NVMe really has made life easier from a storage perspective.
Hey, no problem. There were two other things, though, if you don't mind me bringing up the up with. Yeah. So we were looking for other use cases of hosting on. Now, one of them was for testing. Now, we covered that earlier, but the guy took it one stage further. He said, so what I'm going to do is, now that you've told me that these virtual disks on the iHosting i are just objects in the IFS that I can copy, he's going to build his environment with his IBMI on it and his application in it and his test data right at the beginning of how it should be at his test suite. Then he's going to save those virtual disks and put those into a backup area. Now that could be online in his disk or on his tapes. It could be anywhere he likes. And then he's going to run his tests, which then changes all that environment and destroys it. It used to take him hours, if not days, to reset his test environment. Now he says, I'm just going to power it down and put those virtual disks back. So it's just like copying a library and duplicating it. He's copying an entire system without flash copy. Oh, so I thought, oh, someone's been paying attention. I thought that was very clever.
Absolutely. The ability to go back to your starting point in your test environment within potentially minutes is fantastic. And that's a tremendous amount of time savings for development organizations or even any corporation that has a development process. Being able to go back to step one of your configuration is crucial.
And then a second smart guy in the room says, I'm going to use it so I can run 24/7. And I said, what? He said, I'm going to replicate to it. Like using Mimix, QuickEDD, MaxAva, insert your replication tool of choice, the software ones. And we're all going, but you do realize if that machine failed, it's going to be gone. He said, that's not what I'm trying to do here. I want to run my production machine 24 hours a day. So I'm going to replicate all of my data to that second partition. And then at lunchtime, I'm going to stop that replication and I'm going to do a backup. It's just so he could take a backup of a fully working system whilst it was in use. And I said, oh. He said, I'm going to keep my second piece of hardware and also always replicate to that 24/7 for HA. Yeah. This is so I can take that snap backup now. Oh, I said, why don't you do it on the other machine? I said, it's in the cloud. I want a copy that I can take home with me in the evening so that I know that on a rainy day, that cloud is not going to rain on my parade.
Super brilliant, smart guy.
Yes. No extra charge.
Wow.
Maybe a tape here and there.
Yeah, maybe. But I thought that was a super clever way.
I think it's interesting that he's still using tape.
Yeah,
but yeah,
tape is going to be here forever.
Yeah.
The things they do with tape to modernize it are incredible, but I would consider still having my CBU with a configuration like that potentially if it's a crucial type of production system.
Hey, be careful, being respectful to this guy. He'd got his backup copy in the cloud.
Yes,
and the reason why he was using good old tape when I asked him, he says, "I want it to be air gapped." Now, this term air gapping, someone unfortunately comes along with ransomware and they manage to take over your current machine and then they pivot and they take over your cloud machine and then they pivot again and they take over your VTL. No one, if that tape's in your purse or in your safe, you can't mount it, you can't corrupt it.
Yeah.
So, but you can recover from it.
Air gaps are crucial.
This guy, I thought, he's not doing anything old school, but he's using old school tools
to be modern.
Who knew?
To stay ahead of, you know, the cyber hackers, you know.
Amen. So, I mean, that's why I love coming to these conferences. There's so many smart people in the room.
Well, and I think that's why you come to a conference, right? To have those other conversations, to hear how other people are doing things.
Oh, absolutely. And the great thing about being back in person for these conferences as well is people are more willing to approach you to ask a question. When we were virtual there for those couple of years, it was harder for people to come up and ask us a question. And whenever we're together, we learn more things, we solve more things, it gets more creative. And that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, I think everybody here at all the conferences enjoys that. Yeah, for sure. And I know it happens all over, not just the conferences, but at the LUG meeting, at the CAC meetings, at the CAC meetings, at all the small user group meetings.
Superb. Awesome. You get to hang out with 400 of your best friends.
What a great attendance we've had this year at this event. That's fantastic.
I know, it's Prague, baby. Who doesn't love Prague?
It's a nice place.
Beautiful weather and beautiful people.
The best part here, we get to sit inside looking how wonderful the sun is shining.
Well, maybe tonight we'll get out and enjoy a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, all right. So, gentlemen, actually, before we go on, I always like to open up the mic to our guests to say, hey, was there something that you want to get off your chest, something we didn't cover that you want to talk about, something that you think everybody needs to know about?
I'll give a shout out to two of my co-working teams. With the whole advent of NVMe, there was some new different things around it, understanding, you know, how many drives do I have? What do they look like? What's the endurance on them? What's the performance on them? Lots of different questions that people have, of course, and how do I find that? And the people on with Scott Forsey's team and the SQL services to create all these queries to look at these drives, they've done some fantastic work. Now I've got these queries. It's great data, but not everybody's really great at SQL or looking at the data. So with Tim Rowe and the Navigator team, they've done a fantastic job of taking Scott's team's outputs, putting it in all that Navigator stuff, and it looks fantastic. So I really appreciated having fun with those guys, their teams, and getting the details we've been able to present to our customers in a click of a button.
Nice.
So yeah. Thanks to those teams.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. All right, we're going to go on to our one incredible thing for the show. Doug, what is your one incredible thing this week?
My one incredible thing this week. Wow. I'm going to go with an incredible thing outside of work.
Please do.
And like many other people, recently it's been a period of graduation. So my incredible thing is how both of my children have recently graduated. So my daughter has graduated from high school and she's planning to go to university. And
awesome.
My son at the same time has graduated from grade 8 and is looking forward to going to high school next year.
Fantastic.
So I think that's pretty incredible for both of them. And hopefully in 4 more years, we can do this. And I can say the same thing all over again.
Yes, yes. And you'll be an empty nester, hopefully. Hopefully.
The average age these days, I believe, is 32 when they leave home. I don't know.
I don't know. Oh, man.
Yeah. Hard to say, but it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing your one incredible thing. How about you, Steve? What is your one incredible thing?
Well, I feel like a bit of a Debbie Downer now because mine is one of the worst catastrophes that ever hit the planet.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. You guys all know that I love podcasts and that's how Peg and I got to meet one another. So back in 2011, there was a terrible nuclear meltdown in Fukushima in Japan. There's a podcast series out now from the World Service that actually takes you in a dramatical form, a reincarnation of what actually happened. And there are some lessons that we need to learn today, ladies and gentlemen, in there. So if you go to the BBC World Service and you look at Fukushima, you can learn in an interesting and gripping way what happened back in 2011, what we can learn about it today, and dear God, please, that we never have a nuclear meltdown like that again.
I will agree with that.
Wow. Yeah. We'll have to make sure to share that in the show notes. Oh, man.
With a big smile.
That's heavy. That's heavy. Heavy.
But it is a critical thing that we should.
It's incredible. That's what I'll say about it.
Yes. Yes. I think that's, thank you for sharing that incredible podcast.
I know you're looking at me like that, but I am a disaster recovery kind of guy.
Yeah.
If you map what it was that they had to deal with into today's modern IT infrastructure, there are some lessons we can get out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think everybody should pay attention to the past to learn for the future.
But just for reference, if I can choose between Doug's incredible thing and mine, then Doug's, I'll take yours.
All right. Oh, Doug's phone is ringing, everybody. All right. So my one incredible thing for this show is I just want to give a shout out to all the people that work at Delta Airlines. They are absolutely amazing folks in all of the things that they do. I fly a couple of different airlines, but Delta is my favorite. And I just want my flight over here to Prague. The Delta team, they did a great job, and I'm just really grateful to them and all the services that they provide. So that is my one incredible thing this week. Delta Airlines, thank you.
Well, I hope you are flying Delta One Incredible on the way back.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Oh, I don't know if I'm going to get
that. That would be incredible.
I don't know if I'll get that, but it would be fun. So thank you so much, Doug Gibbs, for joining us on the show. We really appreciated having you here. Thank you, Steve, for being my co-host and so wonderful as always.
Pleasure to be here. I look forward to working with you again soon, Peg.
Yes, absolutely. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you on the show.
I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Unveil the future of IBM I integrations with Bright Skies. As the renowned IBM I and specialists, we're not just a consulting company, we're your innovation catalyst. Deep dive into tailored e-commerce solutions, robust security measures, and custom RPG innovations. With over two decades under our belt and a dedicated North America team, Bright Skies goes beyond mere consultation. We build trust, spark dynamic partnerships, and redefine business excellence. Curious? Check us out at brightskies.com. That's BRITESKIES.com. Your next big leap awaits. Unlock your full potential with programmers.io. Are you looking to enhance your development skills and modernize your strategies, or maybe backfill a retiring team member? Look no further than programmers.io, your go-to destination for all things IBM I. They are dedicated to helping the IBM I community with development and modernization strategies that align with their goals. Programmers.io helps you deliver innovation faster for an improved customer experience. Satisfaction guaranteed, or you don't pay. Programmers.io, empowering the IBM I community one developer at a time. Check them out at programmers.io. Empower, connect, innovate. Common is at the heart of IBM I. Join a global community passionate about continuous learning, shared experiences, and transformative tech solutions. At Common, your growth is our mission. Elevate your expertise, connect with industry leaders, and shape the future of IBM I. Your potential is limitless. Discover more at common.org. Midrange Dynamics is your one-stop shop for accelerating change and integration on IBM I. Their products include MD Change for control and automation for DevOps, MD Workflow orchestrates and integrates CI/CD pipelines, MD Rapid reduces database downtime from hours to minutes, and MD REST for I, your all-in-one REST API solution. Head over to their website for more information or to schedule a demo. You'll find the link in the show notes.